Hello and welcome to this EG podcast on the future of Liverpool. I'm Damien Wild. As you would expect from a session devoted to one of the UK's most exciting and perhaps most challenged cities, this session was a highlight of our recent UK Cities Week. As well as a lively panel session, I also got to speak to Liverpool City Council Chief Executive Tony Reeves. We touched on COVID and the changing face of real estate, but the message that came through most strongly was that real devolution would deliver a real return for UK PLC. You may agree or disagree, but it's well worth tuning in. Tony Reeves has been Chief Executive of Liverpool City Council since 2018. He's one of the most experienced local government leaders around, a good thing given all that 2020 has thrown at UK cities. Liverpool, like other cities in the Northwest and some other parts of the UK too, has had to deal with more than most. Tony, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. So you've been in leadership positions in local government for many years, some decades. Has 2020 been the toughest of your career?
I think without doubt, yes. The challenges from all angles and in completely uncharted territory in lots of ways. So yes, I think it has.
Okay. And I wonder whether in some senses it's brought out the best in people and people have pulled together. I've talked to many leaders from the private, public and voluntary sectors recently and many do feel that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Yeah, very much so. And I think that obviously you're going to get issues highlighted where things go wrong, where perhaps people haven't followed the rules in terms of social distancing. I think young people have been sometimes a bit demonized by the media. But my experience of this has been business leaders, the whole of the public sector, the voluntary sector, all coming together and taking collective responsibility to really get the city through a really, really difficult period. And, you know, I think Liverpool people have done an unbelievable job as well. They've been asked to do things which have absolutely infringed civil liberties, all the normal freedoms people can expect in our country. And it's really easy to highlight, as I said before, the things that have gone wrong. But so much has actually, people have adhered to the rules and have taken that responsibility. And I think the vast majority of people have done brilliantly, quite frankly.
That's good to hear. And I think there's plenty of evidence of that. And it's apparent. I wonder as you were sitting there at the beginning of 2020, which seems like such a long time ago, and the year that you were planning, whether many of those things that you had planned have simply had to be put on hold for understandable reasons, and whether many of those things, development ambitions, for instance, are things that that affect real estate. Is that the case?
I don't think our plans have been put on hold. I think what we've had to do is to focus on priority projects far more than we would have done. You can have a debate about whether that's a good thing or not. And I think for me, it's been very much about really concentrating on the things that will kickstart the economy again. We put a really robust economic recovery plan together in the early part of the crisis, which created a real focus with all of our partners for the things that we were trying to do and to really concentrate on generating jobs, training opportunities, developments that would be catalysts for other schemes around them, particularly in the knowledge quarter in Liverpool. And so I think in lots of ways, what this crisis has done is accelerated things we were already doing, made us focus very hard on the top priorities, but recognize that the operating conditions are for us and private sector partners are much changed. Getting schemes funded is more challenging, but I do think that rather than sort of ripping up the script, I think we've played to our strengths, and that's the key underpinning theme in the strategy that we've put together.
And does that prioritisation include housing development, working with Homes England? Does the city centre plan proceed as intended?
Yeah, no, very much so. And, you know, we've got a couple of very big sites. One is in the early stages of moving forwards. One We're shortly to let remediation contracts and for the Festival Garden site at the south end of the city, which is a really significant development. And we're also working very closely with housing partners, local housing associations, and focusing very much on retrofit housing as well to improve the existing housing stock. And that has been very much part of our economic recovery plan.
Okay, that's interesting that you talk about retrofit, and that brings me on to sustainability nicely. As you're planning to come out of this crisis, but when we do come out of this crisis, and you talked about acceleration of plans earlier, do you see sustainability as coming to the fore in city development, citywide development?
Yeah, hugely so. We're getting much more into debates about net zero carbon housing, as an example. As I said, a massive retrofit program would have three real benefits. One, in terms of reducing emissions, about 40% of the city's emissions come through poor quality, older housing stock. And so obviously the retrofit program would probably be the most effective intervention to reduce emissions in the short term. It would also generate a significant number of jobs, as well as reducing fuel bills for poor families. On top of that, we have accelerated schemes to enhance cycling by introducing pop-up cycle lanes and accelerating investment in cycling infrastructure across the city, working with city region partners, pushing ahead with energy schemes such as the Tidal scheme that has been promoted by the Metro Mayor, and a range of other things. Things like, in order to keep restaurants going in some of our main streets, we came up with a concept of Liverpool without walls. And what we've done is closed a couple of key roads in the city and allowed the restaurants in a planned way and a high quality way to come out into those roads. And actually what that has done is that increases the covers that people can safely produce, which obviously is great for the businesses. What that has done is sparked a debate about, do we really need to reopen these roads, or do we want to make the whole concept of Liverpool without walls and street style cafe culture a part of Liverpool's future going forwards? And so some of those themes are getting us to start reimagining what the future of the city will be and thinking long term about net zero carbon, about sustainability, and really about the type of city we want Liverpool to be in the long run, and then starting to make sure that the action we take now is moving us towards that.
That's interesting. I was going to ask about 2021 plans, and that sounds like that's a factor. Some of these temporary measures that have proven to be successful could last. And I wonder whether that might lead to changes or different considerations applying within the planning regime.
Well, the planning regime is getting turned on its head with the government policy at the present time anyway. And I think we've done a lot of work over the last few years on creating planning frameworks on particular parts of the city centre and the Knowledge Quarter and the Baltic Triangle and various other places, so that we're really understanding how the different parts of the city function, what their key roles are, and how the whole comes together. So I think we've been a lot more proactive in setting out planning policies, and we're progressively adopting those at the present time. And sustainability is an absolutely fundamental part of that.
And I suppose quite a big question that isn't completely in your control and your gift, of course, is around devolution and local powers. The local government funding regime has changed pretty significantly in recent years. And then over the last 6 months, mayors and leaders and chief executives within the Northwest have been, have worked together very, very effectively. Do you think that, it's part of your case moving forward that you should have more autonomy, you should have more authority, and with that you can accelerate economic development?
Yeah, I do. And I think it fits with the government's levelling up programme in the North. If all the decisions are made in Whitehall about what the North needs, I don't think that's going to work. And I don't think that's playing to the strengths of the North, the talent that we have, not just leadership talent, but academic talent and the research intensive universities, the role that they're playing, and of course industry as well, where we've got some fantastic assets and the ability to align all of those assets and focus on our strengths. And rather than each place competing with each other for pots of funding with government, having strategies that are aligned. And let me give you an example of that. We've done a lot of work over the last few years on accelerating the work in the Knowledge Core to Liverpool. So it's becoming an internationally significant innovation district. And we've got really big plans for the future, working jointly with the two universities, with now our Liverpool Science Park partners, with the universities, Bruntwood, SciTech. But when you actually look at Liverpool and then you start to think about the Northwest, so you think about Alderley Park in Cheshire, you think about Oxford Road Corridor in Manchester, start bringing those together in an aligned way in a strategy for health and life sciences, digitech, etc., for the Northwest. And I think you have the makings of something that is globally leading in some really significant areas, with Liverpool playing a really full part in that. That's the sort of thing that we can do if we're given the freedoms to work together and plan together rather than competing with each other in the North. That's just one example.
Tony, that's been fabulous. We could talk about all of those for very much longer, but I will take those issues to our panel next. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you. Don't forget, you can use the hashtag EGFutureCities to join the debate on Twitter. So now to our panel to discuss all this and more. And we have a great panel to get to the heart of these and other issues. So we have Bill Addy, who is CEO of Liverpool Bid Company, Mark Boosfield, Director of Commercial Development and Investment at Liverpool City Region Combined Authority, Helen Brown, a partner of Brabner's, Stephen Cowperthwaite, Principal and Managing Director for Liverpool at Avis & Young, and Ian Taylor, Partner and Head of Real Estate and Construction for the Northwest at RSM. Welcome, everyone. You're at the slight disadvantage of not having heard Tony there, but I have, so that should be comforting for you. He made some great points around working together through this crisis over the last 6 months or so, how the city and the wider region would benefit from further devolution, that there will be a sharper focus on sustainability going forward, and how the council is considering making some of the temporary measures it's introduced in recent months permanent. And I wonder, and I'll put this question to each of you in different ways, do you think that the city will emerge stronger from this crisis, notwithstanding some tragedies, and whether those lessons will stick? Bill, can I start with you?
Yes, thanks for that. Will the city emerge stronger? Yes, I believe it will do. I mean, we are a resilient city, and we have emerged over the last 20 years from the destruction of the previous decade. So will we return in a better pace? Then yes, we will. I mean, clearly, we have already started some recovery from the initial lockdown of the spring of 20, and that increase in activity in the city centre and the ability of our businesses to be resilient was shown in the data that was coming from that. So yes, we will bounce back, but clearly it's going to be a hard and long process to do that because of the impact that particularly COVID has on our visitor economy. So there are large swathes of our visitor economy that have not been able to reopen yet, and clearly it will impact on them. So how we come back is also really will be how we as a city work together and to pull back from that. Thank you.
And Helen, some sectors are going to come back quicker and stronger than others. Where do you see strength, and where do you have fears?
I suppose the obvious fear is over the high street and the retail sector in particular, and actually leisure as well. It's sitting here today, it's quite difficult, isn't it, to imagine us all back mixing in close quarters again at events and in bars, and you know the way we've always done and taken for granted so easily. So I think that they're the obvious sectors as people have moved to online shopping in a way that you know it's completely accelerated that process as it has with a lot of other processes. And then in terms of the stronger strength, I certainly think the logistics sector is one that's going to benefit from this. When I speak to agents who work in the industrial sector, they are busy, and we're seeing, whilst there was a sort of slight pause over the summer, I guess, whilst everyone was sort of working out where we were and what was going to happen, those big development projects for the logistics manufacturing sector as well have really come back on, and we're really busy in those sectors.
Great, thank you. And Mark, in terms of different parts of the economy, the public, private, voluntary sectors working more closely together, do you see evidence of that, and do you think that will stick going forward?
I do see evidence of it, but I saw evidence of it before COVID as well. So I'm not necessarily sure that COVID marks a drastic change in that. Certainly, if I name the highlight projects that we're working on, the National Packaging Innovation Centre, which is all about bringing the Centre for Process Industries, Unilever, and a couple of other FTSE 100 and 250 companies together to innovate in sustainable packaging, then you have a natural public-private partnership there. It's the same with Glass Futures, which is about bringing the glass futures industry together in St. Helens this time to innovate in low carbon industrial uses. And it's the same to some extent with the Maritime Knowledge Hub over on the Wirral. So our best projects at the moment turn out to be naturally public, private and third sector.
One of the phrases that got used a lot recently, Mark, is that that this experience, COVID-19, has accelerated many of the changes that were in train already. It sounds like that's what you're describing.
Yeah, to some extent. I see that slightly differently. So and this picks up on whether we'll come out stronger or not. So the overriding narrative that we offer for our recovery is that we have much to protect and more to contribute. So if you look at a 10-year trajectory of the city region's economy, we've taken growth into a position where in three of the last 4 years we were well above average in both overall growth and productivity terms. We've taken unemployment from some 4% above the national average to just below the national average. We've solidified strengths in infectious diseases control, high performance computing, and advanced manufacturing, to name a few. And so we were quite clear about our trajectory before we came into COVID. And we're quite clear that the strengths that I just identified are going to continue to be the strengths that we work on beyond COVID. But as Bill so rightly said, we've got a lot of work to do in the next 6 to 12 months to protect those gains.
Okay, thank you. And Stephen, I think Mark was too polite to disagree with me completely there, but I wonder whether you see that experience that there's been an acceleration, perhaps around sustainability, perhaps in other areas, caused by COVID that will help cities like Liverpool move forward positively.
Yeah, I think you know, we have talked about it many times, the impact of COVID and accelerating certain issues. Certainly town centres is one of them, and the impact, you know, the strategic changes that have taken place, the structural changes that have taken place in the retail and leisure sector that Helen's already talked about. I mean, Liverpool's been very fortunate, and again, Bill's touched upon the resilience aspect, and we, you know, Avis and Young, we've launched our UK Cities Recovery Index, and Liverpool has featured very strongly in bouncing back, partly helped or to a great deal helped by the fact that, you know, Liverpool One as an open shopping centre is an attractive place. In terms of moving forward in strengths, Mark is absolutely right to identify those key strengths that we have in the city and the region, and that we focus upon them going forward. I think, you know, the danger that cities and regions make is to try to be all things to everybody, but certainly around infectious diseases, advanced manufacturing, And you can certainly say that COVID has impacted hugely from an infectious diseases perspective, shining a spotlight on Liverpool's strengths in that area. And they're the ones that we can focus upon going forward to, you know, build back better and create a truly inclusive economy.
Okay, I'll come back to some of those things. But Ian, if I could just bring you on, one thing we haven't really touched upon so far is the impact on offices and what might be happening there going forward. Very, very difficult to anticipate, but I wonder when you talk to your clients, how they are anticipating changes.
Well, I mean, there's obviously everybody's looking at the cost base at the moment, and offices is a key part of that review. But what I'm seeing with most of my clients at RSM and with the businesses that I talk to is that we don't want a knee-jerk reaction to this. The office market is going to have to change. But I think what needs to change is the key stakeholders. So whether that be investors, funders, landlords or occupiers, we all need each other, or they all need each other. So by working together and coming up with a solution that manages the risk and spreads it between those interested parties is something that's going to have to happen going forward. But I don't think that the office is finished. I don't think city centre offices are finished. As human beings, we like to congregate and work together and collaborate. And what it's highlighted to me and to a lot of the businesses that I talk to is that there is still a place, even if, you know, the balance between working away from the office and working it from the office changes, there is still a place for having vibrant city centres, because let's not forget that if you've got a vibrant city centre, that's where businesses can grow, develop, we attract talent, we attract other businesses. So I think having a vibrant city centre and a vibrant office market is going to have to continue going forward, but I don't think it will look the same as it looks currently.
Okay, well, we'll build on that. But Helen, perhaps I could just ask you a question. Again, thinking about the conversations you've been having with your clients, in the government has put many measures in place to support different parts of UK PLC, some more so than others. But one group that hasn't had an awful lot of sympathy has been landlords. And I just wonder whether that they are feeling supported or whether they're feeling that they do need to take a very different approach going forward.
Yeah, I think it's been a really difficult time. We act for a number of landlords and, over the last few months, and we still are really busy with advising them on the changes in the legislation, well, which were temporary and are temporary, to get tenants through the difficult period. I actually don't know what the ultimate position is going to be. I think these temporary measures are going to have to continue and to protect businesses, tenant businesses. And we're advising landlord clients, almost on a daily basis of the changes in the legislation. We get calls, every day from people asking questions about, tactically what should they be doing to protect their own interests. But it's a difficult one, and I don't know whether anyone actually has the answer really yet. I think it's possibly too early to say.
Stephen, I imagine you're getting the same phone calls.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and particularly in the coming back to the retail sector, the impact on income across retail shopping centres has been significant, there was a portfolio of shopping centres come to the market last week where, you've now got a negative income situation on a lot of shopping centres. There's considerable stress there. Plainly that plays into the future of town centres conversation, which Mark, from the CA's perspective, it's an important one for them, and it's an important one for all of us because it's so central to our lives, isn't it, engaging with town centres. So you know, there needs to be a big focus around that as to what we do to ensure that those places which are important to communities don't get left behind.
Thank you. And Mark and Bill, I'll bring you in to develop that point and the point that Ian made earlier around a balanced city centre and that balance between retail, leisure, offices and residential as well. And do you think there will be a shift in that balance, Mark?
I'm going to take the long-term view again, if that's okay. So over the long term, if the UK wants to solve its productivity puzzle, we have to invest in knowledge-intensive, highly productive businesses in our city centres. So whilst they're struggling at the moment, over the long term, there is no doubt that in order to level up, in order to catch up, places like Liverpool City Centre need to have scientists and professionals and all that goes with that spilling off the streets. So I'm just as focused on that today as I was 9 months ago and indeed 9 months before that.
living, working, eating, shopping.
I think it does actually. Yeah, I don't foresee a fundamental change to that. I go out on a limb on that one. Don't foresee a fundamental change to that. Not in Liverpool anywhere, where there is plenty of space for densification and urbanising again, particularly around those knowledge-intensive industries. Which is not to say the town's agenda isn't critical, because patently it is. And patently there's government money available to invest in those town centres through the £3.6 billion towns fund. I suppose what I'm just saying is over the long term, at our peril, will we lose a focus on what we're going to be really good at round here? And lots of what we're going to be really good at round here will be focused on the city centre.
Okay, thank you. Bill, Mark took the long-term view there, so I'm going to ask you for the short to medium-term view on that balance within the city. Do you see it shifting between towards residential, away from retail, away from offices or further offices?
I don't see it shifting in Liverpool. If we look at Liverpool as the example that we're looking at this moment in time, Liverpool, as I said earlier, is a resilient city. One of the things that COVID has taught us is that that we are an interdependent economy, particularly in the city centre, and I can example that via our footfall figures. In February of this year, our footfall was the highest it's ever been. Obviously, it fell off a cliff and we went to a minus 90% of 2019 footfall. So from the average footfall that was about 1.2 million, we dropped to almost 120,000 during April and May. With the opening of non-essential retail in June, our footfall climbed back, but it didn't really make big inroads on that until we opened up the whole of the economy in the city centre with the Eat Out to Help Out in August, where our footfall came back to a minus 25% position, which clearly showed that because our students hadn't come back into the city and because our office workers are not back in the commercial district, then we didn't return to those levels. As soon as we went into tier three, so that our hospitality suffered, we've now dropped back to minus 50%. So significant footfall, so significant activity levels in our city centre come from our hospitality, our business tourism as well. So that's one of the key things about Liverpool, that we are an interconnected city. But, you know, the city has been evolving. One of the great things about Liverpool, as Stephen mentioned, Liverpool One, but we also have the historical retail core where we've had Marks and Spencer's trading for 90 years in Church Street. We've got the largest Primark in the UK, the largest Lush in the UK, all trading successfully prior to COVID. So our vacancy rate was low in the city. We didn't suffer as much as other towns have suffered from out-of-town retail, and the shopping centres that Stephen mentioned there are those in the out-of-town locations where you will see the difficulty for them to recover will be harder than it will be for us in a city. So short and medium term, I think, yes, we will, as a city, we will not see major shifts. We will recover. There will be some casualties, but we will recover into a position of strength, because I think Liverpool is, as we've said, is a resilient city, because of the fact that we have such diversity within the city centre, in the core in the supply chain that's within our city.
Okay, thank you. And Ian, if that balance between residential, retail, leisure and offices in the city is to say broadly as it is, Mark talked about densification, urbanisation and the possibility of that. Do you sense an appetite for more activity, more development within the city itself?
There's still the appetite there, definitely. Maybe some parties are delaying starting or not getting going as quickly as they would have hoped. But as has been mentioned before, we need to keep the city vibrant. You don't want to think back to kind of 20, 30 years ago where going into a city centre was not really something that you wanted to do. We've come a long way in making our city centres in the UK, and Liverpool obviously is one of those, places that people want to spend time. And that's happened because of a balanced approach. You know, it's a place where people want to come and work. It's a place where people want to come and spend their leisure time. It's a place where people want to come and spend their weekends. And that requires decent offices. It requires decent leisure facilities. It requires decent hospitality. It's helped by things like the football clubs. But if we don't continue to develop that, then the city centre will lose its pull. And I think going back to Stephen's point about the kind of the towns in the regions, the towns do benefit from having a vibrant and positive city that's close to them, because it becomes then a region, an area that people want to spend their time. So whilst, you know, we talked about towns and cities being, you know, maybe two separate concepts, they all interrelate with each other. And I think that if the development continues in the way that it's been happening with, you know, in the residential space, in the office space, but also with hospitality and leisure, and everybody values the input that each of those areas has on creating that vibrant city centre, then there's no reason when we come out of this that we can't continue to move in the direction that we were moving at a pace, you know, before we moved into kind of February and March this year.
Okay, thank you. And Helen and Stephen, just to broaden the focus a little bit to how Liverpool can be stronger, perhaps in partnership with other areas. Tony talked about the Knowledge Quarter earlier, and he used that as an example of if it were to combine more effectively, perhaps through devolution with Alderley Park and the Oxford Road corridor in Manchester, then all three could be greater than the sum of their parts. Do you see an opportunity for that, Stephen? I'll start with you. And is it only made possible by further devolution?
Well, dealing with the first part of the question, then if you look at it from a global context, from an inward investment perspective and trying to attract occupiers, then 40 miles from Liverpool to Manchester is nothing at all. So, you know, Liverpool has real strengths in life sciences, but it only has real strengths in certain areas of life sciences, and infectious diseases is one of those particular areas. So I think what you look at is complementarity with Manchester and with other cities, but you bring those two together, you know, you have the Oxford Cambridge you know, situation, and there's no reason why Manchester and Liverpool can't work together in that context. So absolutely, I think that is a big opportunity for the two to come together. And does devolution help that? You know, plainly it does, because what you've got there is an example of a leader locally knowing what sort of interventions can make a difference, and he knows that by working collaboratively with the leaders in Manchester, then it's to the benefit of both of those great northern cities.
Thank you. And Helen, do you see a productivity win there by that sort of approach?
Perfect sense, doesn't it? I'm many others are just sick of the comparison that's always drawn between Liverpool and Manchester and has been over many years. It's almost a it's just a bit of a silly question now. And I think it makes perfect sense for both regions to work together so that they're not competing with each other necessarily. But what they're doing is complementary, as Stephen said, just if nothing else, because of the proximity of the two cities. And they're almost viewed as being one and the same because of that from a global point of view. So yeah, absolutely perfect sense.
Okay, thank you. And Mark, your boundaries perhaps don't stretch quite as far as some of those places I mentioned, but you know, your role is very much to make a city region greater than the sum of its parts. Do you think you're pushing up against the what's possible within the current devolved powers, and do you need further powers to make those productivity gains?
Of course we do. But regrettably for you, I'm going to answer the previous question first. So if you look at what we've just done, so the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, which is the oldest infectious disease, so tropical disease research institution in the world, just led a consortium that won 18 point something million pounds from the Strength in Places fund and has levered in over 100 million of private investment from that. Now, great for us, particularly great for the Liverpool City region, but great also for the Northwest, because the consortium includes Alderley Park and includes actors in Manchester. And I just think the Strength in Places approach and LSTM's ability to stretch across the Northwest is a pointer towards the future. So I'd expect more of it. On your productivity point though, we can't repeat enough that allowing the labour markets of Greater Manchester and the Liverpool City region to interact and merge more efficiently would have a huge productivity boost. And the best way forward on that at the moment is Northern Powerhouse Rail. So anytime we're talking about the way that we work with Manchester, the potential and the productivity, Northern Powerhouse Rail should be part of that, and we should continue to push for it to proceed at pace. Now, on your devolution point, I think there are two things. I think there's one thing about more devolution, which patently, being in a northern city, in a northern city region, we want and we feel we need. But there's another point about certainty. So allowing people like me, like Tony, like our private sector partners to plan into the future rather than to have to respond to funding bids as they come out or are deferred and delayed. So the devolution conversation is about more and more certainty for me.
Okay, thank you. We've only got a few minutes left, and I'd love to finish by asking you, each of you, to make some firm predictions for 2021, but I'm not sure that will get me very far. So instead, I'll ask how you're, you know, what you're doing now to prepare for 21, to try and make 21 as successful as possible. Bill, I'll start with you.
Well, one of the things that we're doing with the Liverpool Bid Company is looking towards the future. So we are already working on our plans for a renewal of the commercial district ballot in the spring of 21, because I believe firmly that a business community that works together through a structure such as a business improvement district can only be a benefit to the city. We've been very successful operating for the last 15 years. So we'll be continuing to do that, continuing to lobby on behalf of our levy payers, and looking forward to Liverpool's recovery from this difficult period.
Thank you. Stephen?
Managed to go through this conversation without mentioning culture, which I think is hugely important for Liverpool. It's a real differentiator for us as a city and as a region. So supporting our great cultural institutions and the hospitality sector has got to be key. But I think the key word for me in terms of 2021 is collaboration. I'm privileged to be able to chair the Liverpool MIPIM steering group, which is a private sector led delegation, but we work very, very closely with our public sector partners. And I think that continued collaboration for me is the key to success in the future.
Thank you. And Ian, don't let me stop you making firm predictions for 2021, by the way, but how are you preparing?
Firm predictions. I don't even think I want to go there. Other than Bolton Wanderers will still be in the Football League is what I'm firmly predicting. At RSM, it's important for us to look after our staff at this point in time, and in the back end of 2020 and looking into 2021, we'll be ensuring that our people have all of the tools that they need to deliver the service that they do. We employ over 600 people across the Northwest, and we'll be focusing on ensuring that they can do what they need to do to help our clients. So it's very much making sure that the platforms are in place. It's very much making sure that we offer what our employees need, whether that be working from home, office space, flexible space. That's what we're going to be focusing on into 2021. So that as we come out of the current situation, we're in a strong position to grow going forward, which is what we want to do.
Preparations for 2021 or firm predictions?
Okay. From our point of view, and by our, I include Bill in this, and I include everybody on this actually, we have to strike the right balance between response and recovery. So we have to keep people in their jobs to the extent we can. We have to keep businesses operating to the extent we can, and all of that counts as response. But as we move into the new year, we're also going to have to think about recovery, which from a public investment point of view means a different set of products and a different set of objectives. So starting to think not just about how we keep people active, but also how we create new jobs and new opportunities for people in the city region. So that balance between response and recovery is key. And my firm prediction is that Liverpool win the Premiership for a second year running. Thank you.
Okay. There's a certain theme to the predictions here, isn't there? And Helen?
I'll stay away from football. Yeah, very much like Ian, as a professional services firm, Brabner's maintaining and expanding upon what the provision we put in place for our people during 2020, and that needs to continue during 2021 as well. Similarly, it's similar to Ian. You know, we've got the new platforms and the basically just the facilities that our people need to comfortably work and be productive, and that's been really successful so far. And then in terms of our clients, again, supporting them through what has been and what will continue to be a difficult period. Our employment team are about to launch a programme which will help clients with redundancy programmes, which have obviously come out of the coronavirus pandemic situation. And then we've got a focus on business immigration, which our clients need support on as a result of Brexit. So those are sort of two areas that we're focusing on for 2021.
Okay, thank you. I'm afraid we're out of time there. Thank you all for listening, and thank you to our panel and to Tony too. Thank you also to our partners, RSM, Avis & Young, Liverpool City Region Combined Authority, Brabner's and Liverpool Bid Company. Look out for online coverage with videos and podcasts throughout the week, and for print coverage on the 13th of November in EG.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.